Now that this week in global history is history, it's time to sit back, relax, and relive the week that was in global history class. Coming to you live from 235, Mr. Palumbo is ready to take you on a journey into the past to understand the present and change the future. Welcome to Enduring Issues.
Hello all, I'm Eric Palumbo and welcome to Enduring Issues for this third week of October. This week's topic is the Industrial Revolution. Like all major events in history, it's really important to look at the causes of those major events, the events themselves, things going on during them, and the effects, the impacts that happen because of them. We're going to do all those things here today on Enduring Issues, and those are things that were covered this past week in global history. First, looking at the causes for the Industrial Revolution. Industrial Revolution is going to begin in England in the mid-1700s, and the reasons why it begins in England are the things that we covered at the very beginning of this week. What is it about England or Great Britain that made it so an Industrial Revolution could happen there? First, to start, it's the natural resources. It's what the land in England provides to it. Just naturally. Coal and iron are generally seen as the two major natural resources that help contribute to the start of the Industrial Revolution in England. The land itself, Great Britain, or England being an island, is really advantageous to an Industrial Revolution kicking off there. The many ports that are available that make it easy to trade goods around the world, to bring in raw materials, to ship out finished products are a major advantage to Great Britain. Many opportunities to have fresh water within the country, to move for rivers, to move mills, to move goods about the country as well on the canal system. A relatively flat terrain makes it easy to build railroads throughout Great Britain. So all these geographic features within the country itself give it a major advantage and give it the ability to go through an industrial revolution. Great Britain's colonies around the world provide it with various raw materials that they can use to turn to finished products. Things like cotton and lumber from North America, silk and tea from Asia, minerals and other precious metals from Africa. All of these things can be taken in from Great Britain into their very many ports, brought to their factories, and turned into finished products. These finished products can then, of course, be sold to those very colonies. This practice known as mercantilism is something that's going to bring a tremendous fortune to Great Britain and allow it to further industrialize, filling its banks with money. Now, so more about England specifically that makes it so an industrial revolution can happen there. I mean, a lot of these resources are available in other parts of the world. Other parts of the world have similar terrain, similar geography, similar deposits of natural resources. But what is it about England that makes it so a revolution can happen there? These are things you can't see, you can't touch. Things like a stable political system. A stable political system in England makes it so the people in England can focus on innovation and improving processes rather than, you know, having to reform their government. A stable banking system and a stable economy allow it to loan out money to people, to innovate, to create new factories, to create new products. So these are things that, you know, other countries in the world may not have at this time. You know, for example, France. France is not a great candidate to have an industrial revolution in the mid to late 1700s. They're going through a political revolution. You know, as heads are being chopped off and rolling through the streets of Paris, people there aren't thinking about better ways to build a bicycle, right? They have other things they need to worry about. But that stable economy and stable political system of Great Britain allows the people there to have a revolution in the way things are made and the way business is done. So looking at why the Industrial Revolution starts in Great Britain is an important exercise in laying out all those different reasons. Once it begins, we need to look at what life is like in Great Britain once the Industrial Revolution has begun and is taking place. There's a mass movement from rural areas into the city. So this movement of population, known as urbanization, is a major impact of industrialization. Folks moving from farms and rural areas into the cities where jobs are in these factories, this low-skilled labor coming to these many jobs that are needed now for production. And what's life like in those cities? You know, how are people's lives different there than they were out in rural areas? So just thinking of the word industrial and the images that appear in our head, the sights and the sounds and the smells that we can think of when we think of that word industrial, gives us a glimpse of what life is like in Great Britain during this time. We picture the giant smokestacks in the factories, the soot pouring out of them from the coal-fired steam engines, that smell in the air, the sounds of industrialization, of factories and machines going to work. All of those things paint a very brief and limited picture of what life is like in Great Britain during this time. We have sources available. We don't have to imagine what life is like in Great Britain during this time because we have the ability as historians to find that out, to hear from people that lived through it. We're recent enough now in history up to the mid-1800s where we have the benefit of photography. We can see actual photographs from industrial England. We have a great collection of interviews from former industrial workers, so we can hear what their lives are like. We don't need to imagine it. We can hear it from some of the best primary sources available. One particular primary source that we use in class are a series of interviews from the Sadler Commission. The Sadler Commission was put together by the British Parliament in 1832 to investigate the effects and the impacts of child labor from Great Britain's industrial age. They asked some adult workers who began work as children, what their lives were like, what it was like going to work every day, and what impact that currently has on their lives. We read an interview with William Cooper, a 28-year-old man who began work in a flax mill at the age of 10. He told us about having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, walk a mile and a half to work to get there by 5 a.m., where he worked until 9 p.m., having only a 40-minute break in the middle for dinner. Growing exhausted towards the end of the night, he recounted how he and other children would be beaten with a strap when they showed signs of fatigue towards the end of their shift. How oftentimes his older sister would work until 11 o'clock at night, getting there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and how little pay they received as children. We saw many photographs from children and adult workers inside of coal mines, inside industrial factories, and the dangerous work that they were doing. We read statistics about how low folks' wages were, how much they worked per day for 10, 12, 14-hour shifts. We saw other negatives going on in the cities as well after this mass movement to the cities to find work in the factories. Sanitation became a major problem. These cities weren't prepared infrastructurally for this huge influx of people and the deplorable living conditions that people lived in, and filth on the streets led to tremendous increases in disease, especially cholera, inside these British cities. So after we understood what life was like in the cities during the industrial age, a list of these problems that occur and things that people are living through, naturally, we need to find ways to fix them. All right, much like Bob the Builder asked, can we fix it? Yes, we can. And the way to fix it is by reform, another new term for us. Right? Reform, there's a simple synonym for it, is change, to change things. I always think of playing with Play-Doh. Right? You play with Play-Doh, you make something, maybe you're not perfectly happy with it, and you can always reform it. Right? You can change it for the better. Now, it's not a full-on change, like revolutions, that term that we've learned from the past where we completely throw things out and start over again. These are simple changes. These are reforms, things that the governments can do, laws that can be changed to make people's lives better. So we looked at four different reform movements during the Industrial Revolution, four things that were done to make people's lives better. One of them was women's suffrage. The women's suffrage movement kicks off in Great Britain with women arguing for an equal say in their government, They're going to work. They're contributing to society. Their children are being sent to work to contribute to society, yet they don't have a voice in their own government. So women's suffrage movement is one reform we saw. The increase in labor unions, workers being unhappy with their wages, being unhappy with their hours, their dangerous working conditions, band together, knowing that there's more of them than there are of management. And they form labor unions to fight for those things, to make their lives better. We see a movement for more public education, free public education for the children of Great Britain. You know, when child labor laws are passed and we end child labor, what are these kids to do all day? So public education becomes a major reform movement in Great Britain, and schools are set up in all the cities and towns to educate the children up until the age of 10, then to high school age. For boys and girls, this is a major reform. It used to be just the boys were sent to school. Now there's free public education for boys and girls. We see reform, as mentioned before, in sanitation. Cities putting sanitation plans in place to help reduce sickness and illness within their growing cities, within their growing population, to stop the spread of disease. So these reform movements are put in place to fix some of the negatives, some of the ills of industrialization. And they meet with pretty good success. All right? They allow for the industrialization of Great Britain to continue on successfully with a healthier, happier, more highly paid, less strenuously worked, better educated workforce. And the success of industrialization in Great Britain leads to the industrialization of other countries in Western Europe as well. With it comes the same success we saw in Great Britain as far as tremendous amounts of wealth being built by factory owners, business owners, bankers, etc. But also a lot of the social ills come to other countries as well. The massive gap of wealth between workers and owners, the long hours, the low wages are things that other countries and workers in other countries are going to have to contend with. And with that is going to begin a debate between two competing economic systems. The economic system championed by an economist named Adam Smith of capitalism, where private individuals own private property. They own these companies and businesses and factories where this tremendous wealth is being made, and they profit from it. And the goal of these business owners and the goal of capitalism is profit, to make as much profit as possible. However, a competing notion put forth by Frederick Engels and Karl Marx is communism, saying that the workers in this capitalist system are being put down. The workers in this capitalist system are getting the short end of the stick, and that they're putting in the tremendous hours in dangerous working conditions and unsanitary factories for really relatively low pay, and have to go home to terrible living conditions, while the upper class, their bosses, the owners, the bourgeoisie, as they're called, can live a lavish lavish lifestyle on the backs of their hardworking employees. And these two competing economic systems and the debate between capitalism and communism is something that's going to continue on for the next century and a half, really. And it's going to be a part of the debate that we have throughout global history, throughout the remainder of the course. This issue, this topic, is going to pop up again and again in other countries and around the world, and lead to varying degrees of conflict in those regions. This fight, this battle between capitalism and communism, these two competing economic systems that come out of the success of the Industrial Revolution. However, there are those that believe that the success was not equally distributed between the bourgeoisie, the business owners, and the proletariat, the workers or the laborers. And again, we're going to see this continual struggle happen throughout the rest of global history. This is really where the week has left off with these two competing economic systems. Next week, we're going to look forward to seeing how industrialization is going to spread to other parts of the world as well, and other parts of the world are going to want to modernize and to see the same economic success as was seen in Western Europe. So with that, we're going to leave you. Thank you very much for listening to this first official edition of Enduring Issues. As always, we recommend keeping your eye on the news for any issues that pop up throughout this week, any current events that you can relate back to things that we're talking about here with industrialization. If you keep your eye on the news, you'll see plenty there about unions. You'll see plenty there about regular people voicing their opinions to the government, asking for reform. You'll see many things there about different economic systems and the positives and negatives of capitalism and communism. Keep your eyes open, keep your ears open for those different things, and find ways to make the issues you're learning about in class enduring.
We hope you've enjoyed this look back into the week that was in global history. The goal, as always, is to be enlightened. If not enlightened, at least entertained. For global updates throughout the week, follow Mr. P on Twitter at Mr. P_Braves. And remember, this isn't just his story or her story. It's your story, too.